Streaming out this Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock. And thanks to those who download these talks as podcasts from iTunes. You're welcome to give us your comments, suggestions, and feedback by emailing us at utahchristians@gmail.com. We also have a membership class at our website, utahchristians.org. I'd like to thank those that have taken the membership, become members. We couldn't do what we do without your help and support. Everything is inspired by the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. I'd like to talk today about being a cut above. We live in a society in which mediocrity is the norm. People do as little as they can to get by. They don't take pride in their work. They don't take pride in who they are. When someone's watching, they perform one way, but when no one's watching, it's a whole different story. They cut corners and take the easy way out. If we're not careful, we'll be sucked into that same mentality of mediocrity, thinking that it's okay to show up late for work, or to show up late for Mangalarti, or show up late for class. It's okay to be sloppy and not look our best. It's okay to not give it our all. But I've learned that Krishna, which is our name for God, He doesn't bless mediocrity. He blesses excellence. When you have an excellent spirit, when you do the right thing, whether anyone is watching you or not, you go the extra mile, you do more than you have to. Other people may complain, other people may go out looking sloppy, cutting corners, but don't sink down to that level. Well, Chiru, someone says, everybody's doing it. Everybody slacks off when the boss isn't around. Everybody compromises at my school. Not everybody takes care of their yard in my neighborhood. Here's the key. You're not everybody. You're a cut above. You're called to be excellent. Krishna wants you to set the highest standard. If you're familiar with the Bhagavad Gita, the Song of God, in the beginning, Arjuna, the great warrior, hesitates to fight against his friends and relatives, even though they're wrongdoers. And his thinking is relatively long-term. In our society, which values immediacy, we're thinking in terms of the next minute, or the next hour, the next day, the next week, maybe a long-term thinker in the modern age is someone who thinks a month away or a year away. Arjuna, from a relative point of view, he was thinking fairly well down the path. He said, even though they're miscreants, even though they're wrongdoers, if we kill these warriors who oppose us, their wives will become widows, their children become orphans, they'll feel unwanted, unloved, they'll grow up as what is called in Sanskrit varna, shamskara, or an unwanted population. There'll be more crime, there'll be more difficult with law enforcement. And the negative societal ramifications of continuing with this war may last for generations and generations, 100 years or maybe more. And that's relatively long-term thinking. But Krishna pulls Arjuna up short and he says, I see the big picture. I am the creator of millions of universes. I know past, present, and future. And whatever great men do, common men will follow in their footsteps. So if you treat these people with partiality, you fought many bad guys, but because you weren't related to them, you didn't have a problem. These guys are just as bad, but now you're having a problem because you have a bodily connection with them, because you regard them as kith and kin. But if you're a leader, if you're a king, you have to act with total impartiality to set a timeless standard. A king who's acting according to dharma or duty, if their son, their dearest son, comes before them, guilty of a crime, to set the highest, most timeless standard possible, they'll not exhibit the slightest bit of partiality because of that bodily connection. That son who's committed a crime will suffer the punishment just the same as if any citizen had done that. On the other hand, if that king's most bitter enemy is hauled up before him in the tribunal, unfalsely accused of a crime, the king will exonerate him. Rather than taking advantage of the opportunity, aha, here's a chance to get rid of my enemy, no one will say a word about it. He will exonerate. And his enemy will not feel, in the course of the process of the turning wheels of justice, his enemy will not feel any discrimination against him. This is the standard which Arjuna is called to by Krishna. Not a relative standard, but an absolute standard. Did you know that according to surveys, amongst businessmen, the most dishonest businessmen in the world today are those that took courses in ethics in college? Today, it's all situational ethics. It depends on the circumstances. If everybody's cheating in school, it can't be wrong for me to do the same thing. What's right for one time, place, and circumstances may not be right for another place, time, and circumstance. But Krishna is calling Arjuna to a standard of excellence, not just a relative standard, a situational standard, but an absolute standard. Of right and wrong, black and white, of absolute ethics, which are good for all times, all places, and all circumstances. If you're a pious person, if you're a God-conscious person, if you're a church, synagogue, temple-going person, you should be the example in your company, in your temple, in your school. You should be the model employee. Your boss should be able to say to the new hires, watch this person develop their skills, cultivate their habits. They're the cream of the crop. They're always coming to work on time, with a good attitude, doing more than they have to do. When you have a good spirit, not only will promotion come your way, but you will honor God with your life. A lot of time we think, well, I'll go to church and I'll read my Bible, I'll read my Bhagavad Gita, and I'll honor God in that way. And that's true. That does honor God. But our spiritual master said, don't just lock up God in the church and visit Him 1 hour a week. Bring Him into your family relations. Bring Him into your school. Bring Him into your office place. There's a way to be God conscious 24/7. Krishna was personally present on a battlefield showing Arjuna that there is an absolute, there is a God-conscious way when necessity dictates to even fight a war. It honors God to get to work on time, to be productive each day, and to look your best. When you're excellent, your life is giving praise to Krishna or God. You may not be able to stand up like I do before a crowd and string words together and articulate a message on Sunday. That's all right. You have a ministry. You have greater sermons to preach every day of your life. Your life itself, as you live it, is a sermon. If people know that you're a Mormon or that you're a Hare Krishna or that you're a practicing Jew, they're looking at you through a microscope. They're looking at your reactions. They're looking at your goals. They're looking at your ambitions. And they're seeing if you're frustrated by the same things that they're frustrated by. If you have the same ambitions that they do. You watch the same TV shows they do. You rent the same videos that you do. You get aggravated at the same things. They're thinking, what's the use? Why should I? They don't have anything that I particularly want. You know, I don't go to church and I react the same way they do. Our lives are our sermons. People are watching our lives, and depending on how we act, we are sending out a message to them. Some people will never come to church. Some people will never read the Book of Mormon. They'll never read the Bhagavad Gita, but they're reading you in school, in the office place, in the gym, in traffic. They're reading you. They're watching how you live. So every one of us is giving a sermon every single day of our life. If we learn to go the extra mile, we'll be giving out a good message. If you're familiar with the Mahabharata, after the Kurukshetra War, Dhritarashtra was the old blind king. And because of his attachment to his evil son Duryodhana, he had been misled his entire life. He had been a co-conspirator against the pious, righteous Pandavas. And as a result of his bodily affection and his unnatural attachment to his crooked son, he lost everything. Now Yudhisthira, against whom he conspired to burn and to kill and to torture and to kidnap his wife, nobody would have blamed Yudhisthira for not treating Dhritarashtra with respect. But Yudhisthira was a person of excellence. And he not only treated Dhritarashtra with respect, But he put him up in the best room in the palace. And before Yudhisthira did anything else, the first thing he did every day was he looked in on Dhritarashtra to see how he was doing, and he called him king. At the end of his life, Dhritarashtra came to the realization that our material family, our parents, our brothers, our sister, while important, are not the most important family that we can get into in this lifetime. The more important family is the family of religious, pious, God-loving people with whom you're going to spend eternity. And normally, they overlap. Normally, honoring your father and mother, if they're pious, righteous people, is like honoring God. You honor God through your father and mother. And normally, they overlap. You don't have to make a decision. But not always. Not always. There are parents of young people who decided to be Hare Krishnas, who were so upset, who even threatened suicide, who went so far as to say, I would rather my son or daughter be out at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning doing God knows what than to be in bed at 9 o'clock asleep in a Hare Krishna temple. That's an instance where there's a parting of the ways. There's a decision to be made, relative or absolute. The attitude of excellence is that I'm not just going to squeak by, cut corners, and do the minimum to keep this job. No, I'm going to do more than is expected of me. If I'm supposed to show up at work at 8 o'clock, I'm going to be there at 7:45. And I'm not going to start shutting down my computer 30 minutes before closing time. If I'm a devotee, I'm not just going to chant my rounds when someone's watching me and otherwise slough off. I'm not just going to chant my rounds when there's 20 people in the temple room in the morning. I'm going to chant my rounds even if I'm the only one, because I know that God's always watching me. Some devotees do their service, whatever number of hours they're required to do, 20 hours or 40 hours a week, whether it be cooking or pujari or doing the grounds and the landscape. But then they'll spend time late at night Skyping with their friends, getting to bed at an odd hour, and then getting up tired and grouchy the next day, giving Krishna the leftovers. They get a task assigned by the leader, and instead of doing it right away, they put it off till tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. And they have to remind it again and again and again to do that. And then they wonder, why I'm not getting the juice? Why I'm not getting the joy? Why I'm not getting the favors? But Krishna doesn't reward sloppiness. He rewards excellence. I read that the biggest killer of churches, there's two factors that have been determined why churches, certain churches don't grow and they waste away. And one of those two factors is that people spend so much time preaching people on the internet, they don't take care of the flesh and blood people that come through the door. So to be excellent, it's important to get out of one's comfort zone. See things from the perspective of every new person that comes to the church or the temple or the mosque. Do an experiment. Go outside one time, clean your mind of all your preconceptions, and walk in the door as if you were a first-time comer. Does someone come and greet you effusively? Do they welcome you? Do they show you where the service is taking place? Do they give you a program, an answer, or offer to answer any of your questions? Are the bathrooms clean? Are the waste bins clean and deposited? Are they spilling over with different types of paper? Are the lights on? Is there a nice, cheery atmosphere? Walk through the door as if you're walking through for the first time. We had a visitor from Italy, a devotee from Italy, had stayed with us for a month. And he was a person of excellence. One evening, we had the RT, and we had the Bhagavad Gita class, and we had a young fellow in here, looked like he's about 18 or 19 years old. And he came down the stairs, several of us were sitting down when he came down the stairs, and Rohini Nanda, the fellow from Italy, was actually on his computer when the boy came down the stairs. But he put his computer aside right away. He turned his chair to face the boy, and he said, how did you enjoy the RT and the Bhagavad Gita class? And the boy, who obviously was coming for the first time and obviously was very much out of his element, he said, oh yeah, it was really interesting with, you know, a lot of commitment there, a lot of conviction. And there were some homemade chocolate cookies. So Rahini Nanda took and gave him a cookie. He was so kind and so caring. He did everything but hand feed it to him. And when he finished eating the cookie, he said, "Have another cookie." And then he said, "Will you come back again?" And the boy said, "Oh yeah, most probably." With, again, not much conviction. And he said, "Take some cookies with you." And he packed him up a little bowl of cookies and sent him off. They say, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So that boy wasn't sure at all about the exotic chanting and the altar. He wasn't sure about the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, which was different from anything he'd ever heard before. But he left here with a warm feeling in his heart, because Rohini Nanda wasn't content just to keep his nose stuck in his computer, but he put it aside. He gave him his full attention, his full care, his full concern, and his full love. And that was a sermon. That was better than the Bhagavad Gita class. That was better than the Sunday sermon. True, I'm chanting Hare Krishna. I'm declaring Krishna's grace in my life. I'm asking him for service. That's one part of it. But the other part of it is, are you getting to work on time? Are you arriving for the Sunday feast on time? Are you doing more than you have to do? Ask ourselves this question. Are we better this year than we were last year? Your temple or your company should not get along nearly as well without you. You should be so skilled, so valuable, so productive, so needed, they can't even imagine going on without you. They can't afford to lose you. When I was in Los Angeles, I belonged to a running club. And they had this t-shirt with a phrase on the back. It said, "There's no such thing as staying the same. You're either striving to get better or you're allowing yourself to get worse." In this material world, there's so much friction, there's so much that comes against us, that if we're not constantly improving, constantly learning, constantly sharpening our skills, especially in this day and age, things are moving so fast that you have to be learning all the time just to keep abreast. If you're not doing that, you're being pushed down. There's no third option, only two. There's no treading water, there's no staying the same. There's either striving to be better or allowing yourself to get pushed down, falling behind. So people of excellence, they constantly take steps to grow. Whatever they do, they get better at it. Take classes, find a mentor, take seminars and workshops. Study ways that can be more productive, more efficient. Meet people of similar interests. My experience is, in public speaking, I have 40 years experience. I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement in Australia in 1970. And for some reason, because I joined a little earlier and many other people came after me, even though they only came weeks or months after me, some or other, I was the one who was delegated to give the morning class every morning. And in those days, a morning class was 1 hour. We used to chant Jaya Radha Madhava, prefatory song. Then we'd responsively chant the Sanskrit. Then someone would read Prabhupada's purport. And then the lecture would start. And the lecture was expected to speak for one solid hour. And I did that every single morning for 5 years, from 1970 to 1975. I also have some natural talent and interest in it. But when I approach these Sunday lectures, both here in Salt Lake City, which are open to the public, I don't rest within my comfort zone. I don't speak off the top of my head. I prepare very, very carefully, with the thought in mind that I'm not speaking to the crowd. I'm not speaking to devotees. I'm not speaking to people who believe what I do, who have made the commitments that I have and have bought into the philosophy I have. I may be speaking to any kind of a person, an agnostic who doesn't believe in God because he hasn't heard better arguments, someone who has been in another religion and been ill-treated and had a bad experience. Who knows who's going to walk through the door? People are also nowadays interested in something they can use. It's all very well to talk about transcendence and the sweet by and by, but people want something practical. They want something that they can use when they go to work and they go to school on Monday morning to meet and to overcome those challenges. They want something imminent. So I take all these things into consideration. Because we're advertising to the public, It's a seeker-friendly service. And to that end, I take Mondays off and I spend about 4 or 5 hours researching and putting a talk together. I try to record it before the first talk on Saturday night and listen to it back and find the flaws and the flubs and the ums and the ahs and the I don't knows and all the stutters. I give it Saturday night at 7 o'clock in Salt Lake City to our biggest crowd of the week, incidentally. And then I record it and I listen to it before I go to bed Saturday night. I get up Sunday morning and after I chant my rounds, I listen to it once or twice again. Then I give the talk 10 o'clock on Saturday. I record that. I give another talk, the same talk, at noon on Saturday, and I record that. And if there's nobody in the car when I drive from Salt Lake City to Spanish Fork, I listen to both those recordings in the car. Then I give the talk at 5 o'clock on Sunday night in Spanish Fork. Then Monday, before I start preparing next week's talk, I listen to all four talks to decide which one we should send as a podcast to iTunes. So I could give a good talk. I could give a good talk. I could even give a great talk just off the top of my head. But I want to honor God. And I want to give you the best experience that you could by trying for a standard of excellence. And there's also a selfish element. After all that, whatever truth I've spoken, I've gotten it really, really deeply embedded within me. But the point is that we do it in order to please the Lord. And someone says, well, true, for all that effort and all that time, you've got a lot of empty spaces in here. You don't even have what is even close to a full hall. But it's not people that propel us forward. It's not people that anoint us. It's God that pleases us. One time in the beginning of his mission, Prabhupada was in London, and the devotees rented the most prestigious hall in all of London. It was called Conway Hall. It cost a lot of money to rent it, and they put out flyers and posters and advertised it, and not one single person came. But Prabhupada said, Krishna's here, Brahma's here, Narada Muni is here, and he gave a wonderful half an hour talk. Because he recognized we're not here to please people, we're here to please God. And any hall will fill up, not just because we're people pleasers, but because we adhere to a standard of excellence and God himself is pleased. No one would complain about an off the top of the head talk. In fact, many people, when we used to do that, were complimentary. But we want it to be the best that it could possibly be, considering who that we're talking to, that we're putting together a seeker-friendly class. And there's no substitute for preparation. And I don't want to be at the level I'm at all the time. I don't want to rest on past laurels, past achievements, past talents. I want to be more skilled as time goes on, more effective, making a greater difference. And who knows, if we continue to try to please the Lord with an ideal of excellence, maybe these halls will be filled up someday. Here's what I found. Favor and excellence go hand in hand. If we don't take care of what Krishna has sent us, how can he bless us with more? Have you ever seen someone drive an old battered car that hasn't been washed in years and years and years? And their thinking is, why should I take care of this car? I'll wait until I get a new one. But you won't get a new car unless you take care of what you have. I've seen people in mud huts in India that had a spirit of excellence. I've seen women in India who have a family of six which lives on an income of $1 a day. And they wash themselves, they bathe themselves, they put coconut oil in their hair, they buy for 10 cents a garland of flowers on the street, they put on a colorful sari, and they walk around like queens. They walk around like queens. And in Los Angeles, I've seen ladies who are worth $10 million go out looking frumpy like a bag lady. You don't have to have the best things to have a spirit of excellence, but you have to do the best you can with what God has sent you. Here is a temple, and if you go to any LDS temple, that spirit of excellence is reflected. How clean it is, how spotless it is, there's no trash anywhere around. The temple is the place where God lives. And so if you see trash, if you see anything that's not as it should be, take it upon yourself to clean it up. There may be someone hired to do that. It may be done sooner or later. But in a spirit of excellence, do more than is required of you. The building represents the Lord, and make sure it represents Him perfectly. He's not a sloppy God. He's not a second-class God. He's an excellent God. When you're at the grocery store and something falls off the shelf onto the aisle, don't walk by it and pretend you didn't see it. Pick it up and put it back. When you bought some cereal and three aisles later you decide you didn't want that brand after all, don't put it back in the detergent. After you've emptied your shopping cart into the car, don't just leave your shopping cart there. Take it and put it out of the way into the stall. And no person of excellence will ever illegally park in a handicapped spot because they're too lazy to walk a few extra feet. Do these things not because someone is watching, but do them to honor God. Sometimes you have to say, Lord, I don't feel like doing this. I don't agree with this. I don't think it's necessary, but I'm going to do it to honor you. What my boss is asking me to do is way over the top, but I'm going to do it, not to honor him, but to honor you. I didn't make that mess. I shouldn't have to clean it up, but I'm going to do it to honor God. Some people are not seeing Krishna's favor like they should because they're not passing the small tests. Being excellent may not require huge adjustments in your life. It may be small things that you need to work on. Getting to work 15 minutes early. Cleaning up when you don't feel like it. Here's the key. Don't let something small keep God from releasing something big into your future. I heard a story about a minister. He was late for a very important meeting in his church with some of his main donors. But his wife had asked him to pick up something at the grocery store on the way. So he nipped in, he got the items, he went to the cashier, he gave the girl a 20. He took a couple of bills, put them in his pocket, ran out to the car, turned the ignition on, and then he noticed that what he thought were dollar bills changed were 20 bills, $22 bills. She'd give him a change as if he'd given her a 50 instead of a 20. So now there's three ways that people could go. You could make a bad choice and say, I could use the extra money, it's a big corporation, who would ever miss it, and drive away. You could make a good choice and say, I'm late for my meeting, let me go to the meeting, I'll bring the change back tomorrow. Or you could make the excellent choice, it doesn't matter that I'm late for my meeting, I'm going to go back right now and take care of this. He made the excellent choice, turned his ignition off, went back, went up to that cashier. He said, I'm sorry, but you mistakenly gave me two 20s for change. You know what she said? She said, it wasn't a mistake. She said, I'm a single mom. I used to go to church 10 or 12 years ago, but I had a very bad experience. People were very judgmental. They looked down on me. I haven't gone to church for over a decade. But last Sunday, I had an inspiration to go to church. And I went to your church and I came in, I sat in the back row and I listened to your sermon about integrity, about honesty, about not being hypocritical, about having a spirit of excellence. And when I recognized you going up and down the aisles of the grocery store, I decided that I would give you extra change just to see how you would react. Whether you are in fact a person of excellency, a transparent person, an honest person. And you pass the test, and I'll be there next Sunday in the front row. And the preacher said, thank you, Jesus. When you have a spirit of excellence, you don't compromise, you don't just go with the flow, you don't just do what everyone else is doing. You make the most excellent decisions. One time I was in Los Angeles selling cookies at the exit to a Kmart door. I was 700 miles away from home and from my wife. We needed money for the construction. And selling cookies in Los Angeles is not the most lucrative business. Maybe you make $150 a day and you take away your expenses and costs and everything like that. And you have a large Latin population. So you learn to sell cookies in Spanish. Una paqueta $2, tres paquetas por $5. That means one bag for $2. Our special today is three bags for $5. And we have three kinds of cookies, cacahuate, avena, and chocolate. peanut butter, chocolate chip, and oatmeal raisin. So I just made a sale to a nice Spanish lady, and she took her 3 bags of cookies after having ruffled through her purse and given me a $5 bill. And after she was long gone, driven her car away, I noticed a yellow piece of paper on the corner of the table. I looked at it, it was a money order for $380, and there was no recipient. It was like cash. It was like anybody could take it and write their name and get it. And I thought, that lady, she probably cleans houses. She probably got several kids. Her husband may not be employed. This is her whole week's salary. She's going to be devastated to lose that. The bad thought would have been, hey, I could pack up and I could have 3 days profit for my cookie sales. Unfortunately, that didn't cross my mind. The good decision might have been, I'll turn it into the lost thing I found at the store. But being a Spanish lady and maybe not speaking English and not feeling comfortable, she might never have gone there. Or what if the person there wasn't totally honest? So I thought, I'll wait. She'll discover that she's missing it and she'll start backtracking. So she left it and bought it at 10 in the morning, noon, 2, 4, and normally I'm there till 5 anyway, so that wasn't a big burden. But I would pack up at 5 because everybody's home, everybody's eating, very few sales after 5 o'clock. 6 o'clock came, 7 o'clock came, 8 o'clock came. I'm thinking, it was like just me, 3 cars in the parking lot, you know, Kmart, there's a Walmart down the street, you know how that goes, right? Finally, at 8 o'clock, she came back and she said, did you happen to find something on the table? I said, yes, ma'am. Here it is. I've been holding for you all day long. She was so happy. She was so delighted. I could have made a bad decision. I could have made a good decision, but I made an excellent decision. And I can share that with you here. 15 years later, I've gotten satisfaction. I've gotten reward for that. So even in small areas, make sure that you're representing God in the right way. Outclass those around you, not just with good decisions, but distinguish yourself by making excellent decisions. Don't compromise. Don't just go with the flow. Don't just do what everybody else does. When you have a spirit of excellence, Krishna will give you unprecedented favor, creativity, wisdom. It will cause you to stand out. You will outclass in humility those around you who are not honoring God in their lives. My question today is, are you distinguishing yourself? Are you going the extra mile? Are you doing more than you should do? Are you making the more excellent choices? Krishna is always working with us in areas to bring us up higher. Compared to a year ago, is there more excellence in the way that you treat people? Compared to a year ago, is there more excellence in how you present yourself? Compared to a year ago, is there more excellence in your career? Is there more excellence in the way you chant your rounds? Is there more excellence in the way that you serve the deity? You are called to be a cut above. You have excellence in the inside. Now stir it up and bring it to the outside. If you do this, you will attract favor, promotion, satisfaction, and you'll attain the eternal association of the Supreme Lord in the very, very near future. And if you'd like to chant with me, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.